Welcome to another Innovation Forum podcast with me, Ian Welsh. Joining me today is David Horlock, Managing Director for Global Food and Retail Supply Chains for BSI. Welcome back to the podcast, David.
Hello, Ian. Great to be back again.
We're going to talk a little bit about the development of BSI of some standards for red meat. So, David, why is BSI developing standards for red meat?
Well, Ian, as a standards body, we have a Royal Charter mandate to standardise, harmonise, improve performance, ensure sustainability, you know, focusing on critical global issues. And we just think that sustainable beef falls into that sort of category, along with plant-based foods, fortified food, plastic, circular economy, regenerative agriculture. You know, there's a bit of a theme going on there. There's lots of different standards around there on sustainable beef. And if you ask 20 different people, what does sustainability mean? You'd get 20 different answers. So this is a good opportunity to clarify it to the international agenda. And we thought that it was appropriate to talk with the various stakeholders to see whether there was an appetite for this.
So you're including lamb as well, aren't you?
Well, we started off with beef, and then we thought, well, the same principles apply to grazing herbivores, and they're a very important part of a sustainable and a regenerative food system. So we would include, just call it red meat, and it's probably up to the steering group developing the PAS to determine what sort of species that includes, because it could be beef, it could be dairy cattle as well, it could be sheep, it could be goats, it could be deer.
Do you think there's a general lack of understanding then of the sustainability or not of the red meat sector?
The short answer is definitely yes. There's a lot of confusion. If you're in the industry, there's not a confusion. If you're an urban dweller and you don't have roots going back to agriculture or farming communities, you would probably see it quite differently, because the media are obviously reporting on things and there's certainly a lot of myths out there. So yeah, the answer is yes there, but despite misleading coverage that we have on beef, you know, bad for health, bad for CO2, bad for methane, bad for planet, bad for environment, I think we have to put it into context, because there's nothing wrong with meat in itself. It's a way that meat's actually produced. Meat that is produced in a sustainable way can contribute to a thriving food system, which can be environmentally sound, you know, socially responsible and economically viable as well. We have to remember that cattle were put on this planet to consume roughage, and they eat things that human beings can't eat. So they convert grass and roughage into protein, fiber, milk. Two-thirds of the world's land is not suitable for agriculture. It's more suitable for grazing. You know, grazing animals play a very, very important role in regenerative agriculture. And the carbon footprint is very, very low, because they're basically converting sun, rain, CO2 into meat, turning sunshine into meat. So there's a massive difference between grain-fed and industrialized feedlot and grain feeding.
You talked about two-thirds of the world's land not being suitable for grazing. We're not talking about standards that would allow for deforestation for raising cattle, presumably.
No, well, that would be in the scope of the document. So I'll talk about that sort of later on. But definitely there would be no deforestation, because that would not be sustainable. And what do people think about red meat is that healthier change to diet, reduce impact on environment, carbon footprint, animal welfare. These are some of the concerns out there which are causing people to actually shift. But they're not differentiating between rangeland or grass-fed or industrialized farming. So there is a big difference there. So as I said, it's not the problem of red meat. It's the way that it's actually produced and some of the myths that actually surround it from a nutritional point of view or its environmental impact. So we just wanted to develop a standard to define what good looks like and set those principles straight based on science and based on fact.
So what are the principal factors then that determine meat sustainability?
It's trying to mimic nature as much as possible, and remembering that cattle and sheep are nature's lawnmowers and natural fertilizers, right? They're taking roughage and they're converting that to meat and protein. And at the same time, they're contributing to recycling of those nutrients, improving soil fertility. If you look at some of the most productive lands in the world, you go to the Serengeti there, where you get this massive biomass that builds up. You get these millions of herds that go through there. They mow it all down and they regenerate the land, right? They're recirculating those nutrients into the soil. They're putting topsoil back there. They're putting humus back there. It's fixing carbon, you know, and there's never been any fertilizers put on there because it's looking after itself. It's taking the nitrogen from the atmosphere, the phosphorus, the carbon, recycling. And there's thousands of bacteria and fungi and mitochondria and all sorts of things below the ground there, right? The thriving, healthy ecosystem. Animals are a very, very important part of that. So if you didn't have animals, you wouldn't have grasslands. So I think it's trying to mimic what nature does and contribute to circular economy, contribute to better soil fertility, contribute to better land resilience. And the steering group will be responsible to define what is sustainable. So they'll probably look at things like health aspects of meat, good environmental choices in the farming practices, certainly looking at carbon and energy footprint to ensure that it's carbon neutral. And then Ian, probably defining what's not sustainable may be a good starting point rather than what is sustainable. Because if we eliminate what's not sustainable, so things like land care, biodiversity is important, minimum tillage is important, overgrazing is out, deforestation is out. Are we allowed to recycle agricultural byproducts back in through animals? Pea protein, plant-based protein, right? A third of it's pea protein, two-thirds is waste. What do you do with that waste? Do you put that in feeds and recycle it back through animals? Do you turn it to biodiesel? So, you know, there's lots of things that the steering group will discuss.
You mentioned the steering group just then. So what does the steering group refer to?
Well, when you set up a standard, the BSI is the national standards body. You know, we are the expert umpires. We're not necessarily the expert subject matter experts, but what we do is we scour the world for experts and we make sure there's a good balance between consumers and producers and manufacturers and retailers and NGOs if need be. And we sit them around the table. And we help them build consensus from the bottom up. So this is standards being developed by business, for business, taking into consideration the stakeholders. And that's why the standards that BSI develop are so well recognized, because they come up through a consensus-based process.
Thinking back in terms of red meat, how are you seeing consumer attitudes to red meat changing?
Well, I suppose it depends where you are in the spectrum. Certainly with the plant-based halo that's going on at the moment, most people are sort of thinking, well, you know, meat's bad, but we've got to look at the facts. Too much meat is bad, but meat in a balanced diet is fine. And if it's grass-fed, it's got good nutritional properties. The omega fat content in there is higher than grain-fed. It's more natural. It's part of a thriving agricultural system. You know, animals are very, very important in mixed farming and part of the regenerative agriculture. A lot of the issues about methane is unfounded because this is part of topsoil. Basically, humans, we live on topsoil. Today you eat a banana, tomorrow you're a banana. But we're just recycling the first 3-4 feet of the earth is topsoil. So we shouldn't be counting that as CO2 and methane. The problem is coming from fossil fuels that were laid down billions of years ago or millions of years ago, being injected into the atmosphere at a rate that we can't cope with it. Right? That's what the problem is, not the circular economy. If you want to blame cows for passing wind and causing methane, well, cattle is 1.5%, termites are 4%, rice paddy fields is around 12%, fires of biomass catching on fire is 18% per year. So, you know, put it into context. The point I'm making is this is part of the circular economy. Consumers need to understand what the facts are, and that's our purpose here. So in developing countries, I think we're probably eating too much meat. And hence, flexitarianism is probably a good idea. You know, reduce the consumption of meat, eat more plants, eat more vegetables, probably better for you and better for the planet. In the developing world, well, people don't eat a lot of meat. So maybe as they get more affluent, they want a bit more meat. So we can't deny them that. So they're going to get it one way or the other. So how do we do it in a sustainable way and try to educate the market that what does sustainable meat mean and create a demand for that so we're actually purchasing meat that's more sustainable, better for the environment, better for your body, and better for the land.
Yeah, you talk about methane. I mean, the reason why the methane debate can sometimes get a bit out of context is that, of course, methane disappears relatively rapidly from the atmosphere. Is that the point you're trying to make?
No, I'm trying to make that a cow eats grass. It chews that grass. It belches, passes gas, passes dung out. You know, there's methane, there's CO2 there. But this is part of a circular economy. We shouldn't even be counting that. It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant to the whole debate. If the cow doesn't eat it, the termite is going to eat it. If the termite doesn't eat it, it will sort of get bound in the sort of ground and the bacteria will eat it. It'll waste in a sort of swamp, you know. I mean, things break down. So you're blaming cows for something that if the lightning strikes the land and you've got a lot of biomass down there, bang, it's all going to go up in the air. If the termites chew it, well, then they're going to pass wind as well, and they will contribute to methane. So why are we even debating this? It's not the issue.
How will the standards develop, do you think, and how will they engage consumers on this?
Well, the way that standards will work is that they will identify industry best practice. So it'll determine what good looks like, and brands can then use that to certify their practices and develop a means of communication and trust with the consumers. We say beyond quality is trust. So having a standard define what good looks like. If you go out there at the moment and say, what is the standard I certify to? There's numerous standards out there in the marketplace. So we're thinking, well, why don't we have one international standard? Then people can take that standard as the basis, principles and guidelines, which they can then differentiate and add to. But at least there's a governing standard that is using existing standard making processes that's aligned and can migrate to ISO later. So it could be ratified by 175 countries and people can use that as a normative document upon which they certify their products and communicate that message to the marketplace. Just imagine we floated the hour, right? The hour. So you've got a 60-minute hour and I've got a 50-minute hour and someone's got a 45-minute hour. I mean, how would we ever operate? But once you establish the hour, then many watchmakers can come in there and they use the same hour, but you've got different types of watches. Some have got second hands and some are platinum and some are gold and some have for diving underwater and some got, you know, different features and so forth. But there's a basic standard, 24 hours in a day. It's a standard. So all we're trying to do here is clarify a standard because, you know, I'm agronomist and I'm an animal production specialist and I have a pretty good idea of this sector. But if I was to speak to 20 different people about what sustainability means, I would get a lot of different answers.
How then do you see the red meat market developing into the future?
There's some very good principles and guidelines already out there. You know, the Global Roundtable for Sustainable Beef, they have some good principles and guidelines. We would probably use that as one of the seed documents in terms of developing the standard. There are other very good standards out there in Australia, in New Zealand, in Ireland, in the US. And part of the standard making process is to scour the world to see what's already out there, right? Bring all that in together, filter through that, and the steering group would then define the scope, define the output, and put together a best practice standard dependent on that scope. We then have a document for business and industry to actually use. The market, right, so these standards then become voluntary and they can be specified by buyers and they can also be used by sellers to differentiate their products and get them outside of the commodity rut but into the value added. They become the basis of value adding. And as we say, Ian, you know, food equals pleasure and pleasure equals taste, trust and meaning. So this provides the basis of establishing the trust and the meaning is the meaning behind the product. How was it grown? What impact did it have on the environment? What were the production techniques? The differentiators can then come in on that standard and it could be region, it could be origin, it could be breed, it could be what they're fed on. You know, there's many different ways of differentiating products.
Okay, well, it's fascinating to see how the sector develops and whether your standards can really drive forward greater sustainability in the red meat sector. As ever, David, fascinating talking with you. But for now, thanks very much.
Okay, well, thanks, Ian. And yeah, we'll be putting a note out soon to a lot of the stakeholders out there. So if there's anyone listening to this that would like to be part of the working group or the sponsors, feel free to get in touch with me. Thank you for the opportunity.